you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome back to episode 210 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host, as usual. Today, my guest is Jesse Patton. Jesse was a guest way back on episode 122. And as many of you will know, she is an estate planning attorney in Atlanta, and as well as part of the guiding force behind Jurisdiction, who are a sponsor of the show and somebody that I've been working with for a long time personally in my own practice. I've asked Jesse to be on the program today because, one, she built a practice from scratch, and that story we didn't get into too terribly much on her previous episode, but I wanted to get into a little more and dive into the details today, and then relate that to the challenges that we are all experiencing with respect to dealing with this, you know, coronavirus pandemic. So Jesse has some great ideas and thoughts about what this all means, and I was delighted to spend some time with her personally, and I hope you get as much out of the interview as I did having done it. So without any further delay, here's my friend Jesse Patton. Jesse Patton, welcome back to The Law Entrepreneur.
Hey, Neil. Thanks for having me.
Well, I am thrilled to have you back on the show. For our listeners who are keeping track of such things, I hope you are. Jesse was on with Megan Wakefield back in episode 122. That's almost 100 episodes ago.
It's crazy, huh? It seems like yesterday. I remember recording that.
Yeah, so it's a thrill to have you back. Just in terms of full disclosure, Jesse is part of a group called Jurisdiction, with whom I am both a client individually in my law firm, as well as they are a sponsor of this podcast. So just to put the chronology in place, I was a client of theirs before they became a sponsor. I'm now happy to have both relationships with Jesse and Megan, but in terms of full disclosure, I want to get that in front of our audience. I've asked Jesse to be on the program today because she has a very successful estate planning practice herself, aside from running a Jurisdiction. And I wanted to talk about the peculiarities of specifically being able to service estate planning clients in the current, you know, medical crisis that we all find ourselves in around this country. So just tell us a little bit by way of introduction about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Sure. Well, I mentioned this on the last episode, but I actually started my estate planning practice 5 years ago when I moved to Atlanta. I started it from scratch. You know, I moved here and I didn't know a soul. So I really started from the bottom and grew it up, you know, through connection, from one connection to the next. And here we are 5 years later, and I'm running my estate planning practice as well as Jurisdiction, which, you know, as you mentioned, started out as a marketing company, and now, you know, it's kind of moving on to an educational service for attorneys.
Well, let me kind of peel back a little bit, because I don't know that we went into this in great detail, but let's kind of trace your steps a little bit from the start when you got to Atlanta. Sure. Had you practiced elsewhere before you moved to Atlanta?
No, I didn't even study estate planning law or trust and estates in law school. I was full force international trade law. I went to Washington, D.C. to do that. And
lovely place, that Washington, D.C.
I know. It is a good place. I loved it. And it's a great place for international trade law.
Sure.
Yeah. Much better than Atlanta. And some things happened just for family reasons. And I decided to turn down a job in D.C. and instead move to Atlanta. And I moved to Atlanta right before I took the bar in July. And the only person I knew in Atlanta was my sister. And she had only moved there 2 years before. She was doing Teach for America. So it was really, you know, just trying to stay above water and to meet as many people as I can and, you know, start a law practice from nothing, as well as gain the education, you know, on the way.
What made you, and those are two important points, what made you pick estate planning?
I started to think about what type of people that I wanted to work with and the types of conversations and connections I wanted to have with people. I have always had a really easy time talking about difficult things and making people feel comfortable. And even aside from that, I really enjoy it. You know, I really enjoy talking to people about their families and you know, giving them a safe space to open up. You know, I've always been like the therapist in my friend group. And so that always seemed like a good fit for me, you know, the estate planning approach, as well as, you know, the idea in my mind of what kind of life I wanted to lead. When I thought about litigation or working for a big firm, I didn't know, you know, when you work for a big firm, you're working towards a partnership track. And I didn't even know if I really wanted that. And I knew that if I started my own practice, at least I had the ability to build something that fit my own needs.
So it was a conscious decision. It's not like you just opened the door and took the first thing that came through and it happened to be estate planning, or the first few cases were estate planning. You consciously decided, I'm going to do estate planning because it checks all these other boxes of mine.
Right. And I did feel comfortable. You know, I knew that I did not need to be serving people over the estate tax threshold. And still, you know, I knew that was a little bit of a grasp education-wise. I needed something that I could learn fast and be able to show up and serve, you know, professionally.
So let's explore that, because I think that is a challenge for a lot of people, particularly as you were a very young, you know, newly admitted attorney. How did you go about getting that education?
It was extremely difficult, you know, at that time, because you don't know what you don't know. There wasn't even a list out there that's saying, you know, like, if you were going to start an estate planning practice, here are the five areas of law that you need to know, you know, front and back. Honestly, I spent a lot of money. I put a lot of money on a credit card. You know, I didn't have a ton of money coming out of law school.
Right.
And I put a lot of CLEs. Right. Yeah, I was pretty broke. And I went to a lot of CLEs and learned, through learning a lot of things that I didn't need to know, I got down to the core education I needed to know to serve clients.
Can I just rant a little bit about bar associations and CLEs in the estate planning space? I have yet to find one that offers estate planning for dummies.
I completely agree.
You know, the first three or four that I went to really dealt with, you know, how to manage the you know, federal estate tax exemption. Like, that's the last thing I want to know. I want to know, how do I write a will? What are the components of the will? I mean, I took trust and estates in law school, but that didn't really help you to understand how to physically write the document.
I completely agree. Yeah, it is. They make it, even in the state of Georgia, it's getting started. I think it's true in any area of law. They make it very inaccessible.
Yeah. Well, so for our bar association leaders who are listening to this show, you know, do yourself a favor. The same is true in family law. Although I will say, when I started doing family law here in Montgomery County, they did have a program that if you took a couple of pro bono family law cases, that you were enrolled in a very fundamental training program, the Rita Rosenkrantz training session, as it's referred to here. And so that's very helpful. But, you know, family law, at least in this area, is one of the few practice areas that that address that need. And I think estate planning is a perfect example of a practice area where bar associations could really serve their base by making just a real introductory level, almost as if you were trying to explain it to undergrad students.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, yeah, right, I'll jump off the soapbox there. So here you are in Atlanta. You've consciously picked this practice area to focus on. When you first opened, were you operating your firm from the dining room table, or did you use co-office space, or how did you physically approach setting up your office?
Yeah, I ended up using a co-working space. I didn't get an actual office there. What I did was just join the membership, and so that I could have access to the private, the room, like the board conference room. That's the word. When a client came through, and that really helped me keep my overhead low. I think my first year was $99 a month. And I see that, you know, like with teaching a lot of attorneys, that there's this fear of needing an office to look professional, you know, a really nice office, and really investing early on $500, $1,000 a month on a space that you really don't need, you know, in those first 90 days, especially when you're getting that going. So that's a good thing that I always, a good tip that I always share with attorneys, that the co-working spaces are a good opportunity.
Well, and at the time that you were doing that, co-working spaces were just really becoming in vogue. Because I know 15 years ago when I opened my practice, there weren't as many as there are now. Now you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a co-working space at Regis or WeWork or, you know, some of those. Yeah. So the opportunities are a lot more plentiful these days. But still, here you are. You know, I mean, you're hanging out in your shingle and you know nobody, and you're in a new practice area. That's a lot of challenges ahead of you. How did you sort that all out?
Yeah. Well, lucky for me, I was really naive. So, you know,
again, you didn't know what you didn't know, right?
I didn't know what I didn't know. And I just kind of went at it 100 miles an hour and tried everything. I think the one thing that I really lucked into was a networking referral group, referral networking group. In Atlanta, that there's BNIs, you know, around the country, but in Atlanta, there's a smaller chapter called Power Corps. And it was basically being on a team of 20 salespeople, you know, for my practice. And so I really took advantage of that and invested my time in that. And there was a huge payoff.
All right. Well, tell us how that manifested itself. What does that mean? Did you go to a lot of happy hours with this group, or?
It's not a normal networking group. I had no idea what they were either when I joined, but it's typically you meet once a week. There is a seat for each profession. So if you can't come in as an estate planning attorney, you'll be the only estate planning attorney. Or, you know, if you're the business attorney, you'll be the business attorney of the chapter. And each week you do like a 1-minute intro, and then you have maybe 90 seconds to talk about your ideal client. And the reason why I think it works so well is that the purpose of the group is to give referrals. You know, so every week you are either expected to meet with somebody, have coffee with somebody so that you can learn more about their business, or you can give a referral. So we're all sharing, you know, our existing clients or, you know, our other colleagues that we work with, and have a connection in a specific profession already together within that group.
So it's a very structured approach to working in not a small group, but a manageable group.
Yeah, I would say, you know, the groups that I know about, it's anywhere between 12 to 20 people.
Interesting. Yeah. And you said that paid off dividends.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that is probably, if you are starting a practice and you need to get money in the door fast, that is an excellent option.
You started your law practice to ditch the firm life and be your own boss, but your practice is running you. The good news, being an attorney entrepreneur doesn't have to be this hard. Jesse and Megan, the lawpreneurs behind Jurisdiction, are working to build a new generation of solo practitioners who love being lawyers. This year, Jurisdiction is introducing a new program, Next Level Law Practice. Next Level Law Practice is a rigorous training program that provides the tools and business fundamentals for estate planning attorneys to start and grow a profitable and streamlined legal business. Next Level Law Practice gives you access to videos, worksheets, templates, one-on-one coaching, and live group sessions that allow you to ask questions and learn on your own schedule. To learn more about the program, visit thrivejd.com. That's thrivejd.com. They're even offering an exclusive coupon code for the Law Entrepreneur listeners. Just enter the code TLE150, that's like the Law Entrepreneur 150, for a $150 discount off your course registration. And welcome to the show, Jurisdiction. Support for today's episode comes from Ruby Receptionists, dedicated to helping you grow your practice one happy caller at a time. From their offices in Portland, Oregon, Ruby's live remote receptionists create an exceptional experience for your callers by answering calls live with your custom greeting, delighting callers in English or Spanish, transferring calls, taking messages, collecting new client intake, and much more. Just like an in-house receptionist at a fraction of the cost. For 15 years, Ruby has been turning rings into relationships. For more information, call 844-895-7829 or visit callruby.com/lawentrepreneur. Well, one of the reasons I wanted to spend some time talking to you about your past history, starting up your estate planning practice, was the fact that, you know, today, under the circumstances that we find ourselves in today, it can feel like you're restarting or starting anew in a practice area or an environment that you weren't in before, with everybody kind of having now to work more remotely and virtually. It can be that same kind of unknown, you know, experience and that unknown venture. So along those lines, would you have any, you know, recommendations or thoughts about how one could address the challenges that we're facing? I know that's a pretty open-ended question.
Well, I mean, first and foremost, you know, my heart goes out to every small business owner, you know, whether you have your own law practice or something else. I know that this is a really uneasy time in business and just in life, you know.
Absolutely.
I'm dealing with it too. And I think that there is some comfort in that, is that we are all doing this together. And, you know, this is a little bit, it's unprecedented for me too. So I'm just kind of taking it day by day. And you know, I encourage folks to do what I'm trying to tell myself, is to remember that this is temporary. You know, that if this is the first uneasy time in business, it's probably not going to be the last. And so, or if it's not the first, you know that you got through the last one. And so, you know, all that we can do is try to focus on things that we can do in our business right now. So, you know, I do have some things, you know, that I think are working in my law practice. You know, the first thing that I did was to focus on my existing clients and to really focus on how you can show up and serve your community. I think a lot of attorneys forget that their existing client base is their greatest referral source. You know, these are your cheerleaders. These are the people that showed up for you, that have invested in your services, that trusted you, you know, with their family. And so this is a really great opportunity to check in on them, you know, just to see how they're doing. And it's not an email checking in to see if they need a specific service. I'm talking about a one-on-one email of saying, hey, Frank, you know, you've been on my mind lately. I just wanted to check in and see if you need anything. And I don't want, you know, to see if they need anything from the grocery store, even something that you can pick up, you know, when you're there, put on their front step. You know, I of course don't want to put anybody in danger, but if you were going to the grocery store anyways, I think it's a really good opportunity to show people that you mean something to me and I'm here for you. Something that I try to emphasize to my clients, as well as what we teach in our Next Level Law Practice program, is that you want to assure your clients that they know that this is more than a transaction. This is a relationship with a trusted counsel that you are going to have for a long time, and somebody that you can, that I'm somebody that you can come to when, you know, you have questions about something, or, you know, if things aren't going great, you know, in your life, even if it's, it has nothing, you know, maybe it has something to do with another area of law, and I can refer you to somebody that can take care of you. You know, they may not be ready to, you know, to do an estate planning service now, but that type of care and you know, thoughtfulness to your existing client base is going to set you far and beyond above, you know, most other professionals.
Absolutely. You know, yeah. And it's particularly resonant with estate planning attorneys because, mm-hmm. you know, after you write the documents, we're always efforting to try and check back in with our client base to see if they need a change, an update, or what's different in their lives and how that might affect their plan. But it's also true in other practice areas. And I, you know, I would just offer that if you're a family law attorney, as an example, that, you know, these are some pretty stressful times. And I just got through reading an article today about, sadly, the enormous increase in domestic violence issues during the quarantine period. And so just reaching out to a past family law client may be even more important now than it is in any other time. So I think it's important to do that. Another way to, just from a practical tip that I might suggest to our listeners, one of the things that I did was I went back and I reviewed all the testimonials that I had received from past clients, because those are people who are already willing to, as you said, be a raving fan. So I prioritized reaching out to them individually, mm-hmm. not necessarily to the exclusion of others, just, you know, made sure that I was super mindful of that past relationship and that past endorsement.
Right. Yeah, that's fantastic. And you know, I think you just never really know what people are struggling with. And, you know, especially in estate planning, we have a larger elderly, you know, client base, and it is especially, you know, a very difficult time, a scary time. And, you know, a lot of folks feel isolated and lonely and, you know, afraid to go to the store. And I think just, you know, a simple email or call, you know, can go a long way.
For sure.
Yeah.
What else?
Well, you know, a lot of folks that I talk to have questions about marketing. You know, how can I market during this? And I think the most important thing, and this is, you know, coronavirus, no coronavirus, I think the number one thing to remember as attorneys that we have to market with integrity. You know, the fear-mongering, it does not work. You know, I think it's a fear-based mentality, you know, to market that way, especially in our profession, you know, in whether you're a family law attorney or an estate planning attorney or whatever, you know, people need these services. You know, I don't think that you even have to go to that for, you know, right now, people are really thinking about their health and their vulnerability and, you know, being able to protect their family. So it's already on people's mind. I don't think there's anything wrong with marketing your business. You know, I think going back to where my practice is, I'm thinking of this as a list growing season. You know, I'm just thinking I need to take a step back and to get people on my email list and start communicating with them so that when they are ready and when they do have a more secure amount of money in the bank, they'll be ready to move forward. Because, you know, we don't get to decide when our clients are ready or when they think that they need these services. And so we want to make sure that we're still connecting with them and going back to how can I show up and serve? You know, what do people really need right now? And I think what you did with your own practice of offering a healthcare directive to your email list is a fantastic idea. You know, it's something simple that you can do that can get people on your email list and so that you can start communicating with them and start building that relationship. So when they are ready, you know, you're going to have a much larger audience that you're talking to than, you know, if you weren't working on building that list right now.
Yeah, let's talk about some specifics there. So in case the audience isn't aware, and you know, I'm not necessarily doing this to toot my own horn, but one of the things that I came to grips with early in this coronavirus crisis was the fact that so many of our first responders and medical professionals are literally on the front lines of a disaster, and of all the people, you know, young nurses, young physicians, assistants, even the people, you know, keeping the hospitals clean, so many times, you know, 6 out of 10, 7 out of 10, statistically, don't have any plan in place whatsoever. So I thought, well, if I could help them do an advanced medical directive that would indicate who has the right to make medical decisions on their behalf if they become disabled, then that's something I can do pretty easily, pretty quickly. Yeah. And so I initially started doing that for, as I said, first responders and people in the medical profession, and now I've expanded it. And look, I'm coming from a perspective of service first. Now, right. An ancillary benefit of that is that I'm capturing all that information in my listserv software so that I can continue to maintain contacts with these folks that we've been able to help. And I'm hoping that down the road, that's going to be, you know, a productive, you know, approach.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, that's a fantastic example. You know, I think when it comes to marketing, on the other side of that is, I hope people don't feel guilty about marketing. You know, I think if you're coming from a place of service and you know, like, this is actually a service that people need, you know, and that I can provide, there's nothing wrong with that. And, you know, you're not forcing people to be on your email list. Right. They can get off anytime, and, you know, to really believe in your service, because people are staying on that list because they want to know more.
I think as attorneys, if we can, you know, ask ourselves, what is the question that we're asking? Are we asking mm-hmm. them to buy something from us? Because if that's really the question that we're asking, it's the wrong perspective. It's the wrong message. If we're mm-hmm. saying, what can I do for you? How can I help you? That's the better approach. I'll give another example, again, from the estate planning perspective, but it could come from you know, any type of practice area. There are things that people can do to put their house in order that have nothing to do with the documents that an attorney writes. And a perfect example is beneficiary statements. You know, right. So you could provide some educational resources to your audience about reviewing their beneficiary statements to make sure that they're up to date, to make sure that they reflect their current choices. And that's not something you're asking money for. That's just information you're providing, you know, to someone to put them in a better position than they would otherwise be in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just to go off on that, I think also that there is a difference between fear mongering and educating, you know, your client base. You know, in estate planning, we talk about some pretty heavy things that every single person on the planet is going to go through, you know, their own death.
And let's face it, for a lot of people, that's justification enough not to see an attorney about estate planning because they don't want to talk about that subject.
Right. And it's terrifying. And I think you can read, you know, the intent in certain attorneys' marketing of whether it's educational or whether, you know, it's fear-based. And I think doing that in a loving or, you know, thoughtful way, I think it's our responsibility as attorneys to educate our clients. Because at the end of the day, you know, we're not making the decision on whether an estate plan is right for them or what type of estate plan is right for them. But I think it is our responsibility to let them know this is what your family is going to go through when they go through the probate process, or this is what the guardianship process looks like in my state or in your state, and give them the full picture so that they can make an educated decision on their own.
Now, we've talked about reaching out to clients and past clients and future clients either by email or via the phone. And I like to remind people that the phone still works, you know?
Yeah.
Attorneys, sometimes we're so hesitant to actually pick up the phone and talk to someone. We want to look at the ways that we could leverage our time. But in point of fact, that's really what people need right now is that one-to-one communication many times. But would you have some thoughts on how to otherwise service your clients? Let's say you've got clients that are ready, willing, and able to do an estate plan under the circumstances. And, you know, we have some limitations right now. Do you have some suggestions along those lines?
Yeah, I've been in this situation the past couple of weeks. You know, I think a silver lining of this whole epidemic is that one thing that's going to happen is it is helping normalize the virtual practice.
Yeah.
And this is something that a lot of us have been trying to work towards for a long time. You know, when I first started, I wanted to have a more mobile virtual practice, and I kind of got some pushback because I think it was difficult for people to understand how they could have a high value professional experience over the computer. And we have an opportunity to kind of break down that barrier. You know, of course, we're still working on, like, for example, the notary issue of being in person signing. And I'll talk a little bit about what I've been doing with that. But you can even start to see some shift, even in the ethics rules, for example, in Georgia, real estate transactions, they're becoming more accepting of virtual transactions. And I think that is a great thing. And so even though, you know, if those notaries or those third party, you know, the people that we work with to facilitate these estate plans, they're adjusting too, and they're becoming more mobile too, and becoming more virtual. So I think that's, we're headed in a great direction. You know, when this first started, I have existing clients who wanted to get their estate plan done. And so basically I gave them an option. There are banks in town that are still open and notarizing documents. So I broke down the list of what they needed to do. I'm a notary, so you know I could go do that as well. And for those people who wanted to wait, you know, obviously allowing them to wait and to sign until a later date. But what I'm doing right now is even taking advantage of the opportunity to create a virtual estate planning package and to break down, you know, if this is for those folks who do not want to come into the office, who need to go to the bank anyway so that they can notarize their docs there, of making it more accessible to them. And I am not a proponent of discounted estate planning services. You know, if you hear me preach about anything, it's discounts. But I think this is a really good opportunity to provide a more accessible solution to people who aren't in the position to pay those premium service prices, because it's less time, you know, for you, and it's probably one less meeting that you'll have to attend. And at the end of the day, they still get the documents. I think the key here when you create a virtual estate planning package is to break down the process. You know, I think it's really overwhelming for people to think about having to do this over the computer. And even when you're marketing it, you know, make sure you say, first, we're going to schedule a call. We're going to design the plan on that call. Then I'm going to give you, you know, a list of very detailed instructions on how to notarize the document. I think that's the most important thing when you're heading in that direction.
Yeah, let me also offer another, you know, block and tackle, to borrow a phrase, approach to the challenge. You know, the feedback that I'm getting from some of my my younger clients, my clients with less assets that are just starting out their journey in life, is that I'm trying to figure out how to put, you know, food on the table. I can't afford to spend $2,000-$3,000 to create an estate plan, even though I know I need one, particularly in this situation. And agreeing with you that discounting your services just creates other issues down the road. One of the approaches that I have taken is to create really kind of a bread and butter estate plan. You know, just really the bare minimum, with the understanding with the client, look, this is what we're going to generate now that protects you right now, and it's not real elaborate. It doesn't address a lot of things that we would otherwise address if we were doing a more complete plan. This is really bare bones, right. But we can offer this at a substantially reduced cost than what we would normally charge. And then when all this is behind us and we have a little more breathing room, we can update your plan for the difference between the two.
That's a great idea.
You know? Yeah. And, that seems to give a lot of people peace of mind. They go, okay, I've got the bare minimum, what I need now, and I can, you know, polish it up later.
Right.
All right. Well, I think that's a lot of what I wanted to cover. Do you have any other suggestions that you think are important in this time?
Maybe just the reminder that, you know, time is a resource too. And it's something that we often don't have, but now we're, you know, it's very plentiful. So to take advantage of it and to work on your business, you know, and during the times where you're not working in it. And I also highly encourage people to look into that stimulus package, specifically, you know, if you have contractors or employees, look at the Paycheck Protection Program. There's some really good information in there. I'm not an expert, so, you know, talk to your accountants, but there's also loan forgiveness. So, you know, take advantage of what you can, and we'll get through this together.
That's one of the areas where I do think the bar associations have been doing a pretty good job in terms of educating their base with respect to what is available to attorneys. Let me just share with you a personal issue. You know, nobody's listening to me right now, so I can talk to you privately here, Jesse. You know, for some of us, not having the structure of a workday, is a challenge that we're not really used to being able to manage. I liken it sometimes to the idea of a writer sitting down at a blank screen to start their novel, or as we used to do back in the old days, a blank piece of paper in the typewriter. You know, sometimes when you don't have that structure of the workday or the work week and have really an open day ahead of you, it's a little daunting on how to manage your time. I know that this is an area that you spend a lot of your energy evaluating. Is there something that you would suggest to our audience to overcome that that challenge?
Well, yeah, and that is something that I really struggled with, you know, when I first started a business and working on my own. I think the time blocking is important, but, you know, right now it can be a little overwhelming because it's different from day to day. I think it's helpful the day before, and, you know, at the end of your day, write down 3 to 5 things that you would like to accomplish tomorrow. No more than five. You know, you don't need a list of 20 things. That's really overwhelming. But if it's 3 to 5 things, I think that kind of helps you stay focused. And also, you know, have some grace with yourself during this time. You know, this isn't a normal work from home situation. And, you know, get up and move, take a walk, and, you know, just try to do the best you can.
Well, Jess, I'm really grateful that you had the time to spend with us today. And I hope that you take care of yourself and all those around you, that you stay safe and stay healthy. Tell our audience how they can reach out to you if they want to follow up on anything we had to share today.
Okay. Thanks, Neil. I really appreciate you having me on. If you do want to reach out, if you have any questions at all, I'm at Jessie, J-E-S-S-I, at Juris, J-U-R-I-S-Diction, D-I-C-T-I-O-N.co. And if, you know, if you are in a position of where you're wanting to start a practice and you think right now you might have the time to do so, we do have a program called Next Level Law Practice, which I'm sure you hear a lot about on the show. But we are offering now long-term payment plans to make that program more accessible for people.
Excellent. It sounds great. And I can thoroughly endorse the program, because having worked with you and Megan for a long time now, I see the value you bring to the table. And if anybody's looking to take advantage of that, now is a perfect time to do that. Jessie, thanks ever so much for being a guest here on The Law Entrepreneur. And I can't wait to see you again.
Thank you, Neil.
Well, there you have it, Law Entrepreneurs. Thanks for being with us today and with this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors, as usual, Ruby Receptionists and Jurisdiction. Make sure you swing on by our website at thelawentrepreneur.com or visit our Facebook page or Twitter account. You can find us anywhere by just searching on The Law Entrepreneur. Also, if you'd be kind enough, I'd love it if you could go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and a review. It helps with our visibility and it helps ensure that we're there to be found when people come looking for podcasts in the legal space. So once again, thanks for being a part of today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur.